Good Wednesday evening, Smashville. How are we doing at Boomba's Craft Pizza and Tap House? Okay, you guys can cheer if you want to. It's okay. We do appreciate that. Welcome to the show, of course. It's Wednesday evening, and that means it's time for Smashville Live here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. I want to thank our wonderful sponsors, of course, New Amsterdam Vodka, Red Spirits and Wine, Spring Hill Heating and Cooling as well, of course. My host alongside me tonight, my name's Braden Gall, by the way. Follow me on Twitter, at Braden Gall. And the Grim Reaper, or Stu Grimson, as he's more affectionately known, around the house or on the NHL Network, or as a former Predator or a former broadcaster for the Nashville Predators Radio Network. You tell me which title you'd like me to introduce you as, but because you've pretty much done it all. You're a published author as
Stu,
well.
Stu is fine. Stu is simple. It's a single syllable. It's brief, and it's to the point.
I like it. Three letters is much easier for me.
I cannot forget that, Stu.
No, great to have Stu with us here tonight. So we're going to talk a lot of Preds hockey, obviously.
Right on.
We're going to talk a lot about the book that you just put out, I believe, in October, a couple of months ago, The Grim Reaper, on newsstands and or the online stand, wherever you get books.
So wherever you get your books, Amazon's a great and an easy way to go. Amazon's got it, and you probably find it at select brick-and-mortar bookstores around the U.S., but Amazon's a surefire way to get it. Yeah, I'll tell you what, order it up, and sometimes it could be there, it could be to you in the same day. That's the world we live in, Braden.
It is a wild lit world we live in. There's no question about that. So, obviously, Boomba's Craft Pizza and Tap House will be here until 8 o'clock, so come on out and say good, say hello. And, Stu, obviously, we'll talk about the book. You have a, for those that don't know sort of your life story, a lot of that, I'm sure, assuming, is in the book. And so, we don't want to give it all away, so go buy the book. But I do want to get in. We'll spend a lot of time tonight discussing sort of the evolution of hockey as a sport, because you played a certain role during your career, and it changed, and the game is certainly very different today than it was when you played. And you ended up as an attorney, which is a totally normal career path for most former enforcers.
Isn't that what all athletes do?
Right. They all go into
the
legal.
Don't most ex-athletes kind of become doctors, lawyers, and bankers?
Of course they do. So we'll discuss that. But let's get started with the Preds themselves, because obviously they make a change. They play six games. I'm not sure really when they move on from Peter Laviolette to John Hines. I'm not sure, and you can speak to this through your experiences. You know, the first game against Boston, you kind of just throw it out. He literally showed up like that morning,
and goes on
to coach the team that night, which again is just a bizarre story from a human element standpoint. But just you've had now five games, really six, to look at the team under new leadership. Is there anything in particular that sort of stands out to you about the way this new staff and the new collection of guys is going to manage this team? Because, again, they've still got a chance, a very good chance, to make the playoffs.
Yeah, I guess a couple of things for me, Braden. One is, you know, I'm very slow to judge in a sample size that small. What is the impact? How is the fit with respect to any new coach, including somebody you know, like the change we've made here, where the Preds are concerned. It's difficult to kind of, you know, make a snap judgment on something like that. The odd thing about saying that is, though, and this has been true really across just about any coaching change we've seen in the NHL so far this year, there tends to be kind of an immediate impact right out of the gate in that first half a dozen or so games. And the Preds have, you know, they've yet to kind of really feel that. Since coach took over. So it's a bit of a puzzler to me, and to me it leaves me a little bit suspicious that the effects of a coach that the problems go a wee bit deeper than that a coach is able to reach in the near term. And specifically, I kind of look to the way the group is performing up front. I think just the way this team is built on paper, they should probably be a little more dangerous, a little more offensively potent.
Sure.
And two, again, I think, you know, part of what's been magnified to this point is we've seen this goaltending tandem of Pekka and Jussi really on average kind of be, I think, a little more consistent and a little more dynamic in their own right through, say, a block of 40-plus games to this point. So I kind of lay the explanation at the, you know, it's equal parts offense up front and the way that team has played between the pipes.
Sure, and no question, you know, the high danger chances are up a little bit. You know, there may be better defensive zone coverage, but at the end of the day, like you said, and I think most fans struggle with this as well. What is the appropriate amount of time to judge a team on anything, whether their power play is amazing or the goaltending's terrible or whatever. It's a very, like, 10 or 12 or 15 games sort of at minimum is kind of how I look at it. And then, all right, let's take a look at what that team looks like over that chunk of time. Then let's look at the next set of those games and then see, and you kind of block it together, because it's very difficult, I think, for fans to look at one game out of 82 and pick any one thing out.
No, I think that's fair. I really do. I think, you know, what's really been interesting to me is on paper, again, coming into this season, I was really taken by the acquisition to go out and get Matt Duchene. I really thought that this team should slot better now, whether it's Turris at third-line center or Bonino at third-line center or even Yarncroak at third-line center or some configuration of those three across lines three and four. But the point I'm making is with Matt Duchene and Ryan Johansson shaking out and essentially filling the 1C, 2C spots, I really thought, you know, adding that strength down the middle would leave this team in a much better position to compete for one of the top three spots in the Central Division. So a little bit surprised that it hasn't kind of shook out that way. On the other side of it, and perhaps this is fodder for, you know, a later series on our show, is more forward looking, but there's still plenty of runway left the 19-20 schedule is concerned.
Well, and it doesn't take too many years. You don't have to go back in the almanac too many years to find a team in dead last place in January who won a cup, because it happened last season.
Having said that, it doesn't happen to some team this season just because it happened to the Blues last season.
Well, and I've asked probably everybody I know in the hockey world about the coaching maneuver, because it seems to work in the NHL far more than it works in any other sport. Certainly the NFL is its own monster altogether, but you've got four teams in the last 10 years that have won a cup while changing coaches. And obviously David Poile at his press conference, he talked to Ope a lot about how, you can't change 22 guys. You know, this is sort of our only move here. What is it about the NHL in specific, the game of hockey that you played so many nights? What is it about the sport that allows for that to sort of be a thing that happens? It happens occasionally in baseball. Yeah. Rarely in basketball. The players are almost the entire reason anybody accomplishes anything in basketball, frankly.
Yeah.
Like, LeBron's the actual coach of the Lakers, let's be honest, right?
Yeah.
So what is it about hockey that sort of lends itself to that?
Well, you know, it's really peculiar, and I'm really grasping for an explanation. I mean, in part, and I'm not sure I know how to make this connection, but, you know, the distinction our sport has to the other sports is really the fact that we essentially play all 60 minutes in motion. We're on the fly. We're changing on the fly. If that clock is running, there are some configuration of four or five skaters on the ice, a goaltender on the ice, and there's a coach behind the bench who's responsible for that chemistry, for that roster. So I suppose at the end of the day, if you listen to that, if you accept that, or at least, you know, focus on that difference, that should be part of the explanation. But that would really be to discredit, you know, any manager in baseball or any coach at the NFL level or Major League Baseball, because everybody's got to step, you know, into that position as head coach or the boss, and they're essentially managing that group of athletes in some way. You know, having said all that, I really don't have a great explanation for you other than to say I think the ability to introduce a new face, a new message, a new tone into the locker room for whatever reason. And maybe it's because now especially we're younger on average than the other sports. You get the attention immediately of whoever that new face, that new voice is. You get the attention of the 20-plus athletes that are under your command at that moment in time. But it is a really kind of peculiar phenomenon, without question, because more often than not, we see some kind of upward tick from just about any team that introduces a new head coach into the mix.
And a lot of it around the NHL this year. I mean, you look at some of the teams this year that have played well.
Remarkable.
And listen, by the end of this thing, there could be double-digit coaches that have been removed from it's going to be a very bizarre year, I think, in the whole. Stu Grimson hanging out here with us, Braden Gall, on Smashville Live, ESPN 102.5 The Game. And I'm curious, you know, St. Louis went on this magical run last year. The Preds certainly did their part a couple of years ago when they finished as the 8 seed and they were playing great hockey down the stretch, and they surge into the postseason, and you take care of Chicago, and all of a sudden you're in the Cup, and you know, oh my God, what, look at the city, right?
Yeah.
Can you try to explain to fans, because I think this team is clearly on paper talented enough to make that type of run. They're clearly good enough to go to gain three or four spots in the standings, which is not, that's a week of hockey, right?
Like
you play four good games and all of a sudden you've jumped.
That's the upside of it. That really is.
What is sort of, try to explain it, maybe if you had teams that went on those types of runs when you could feel it in the locker room over the last 10, 20, 25 games, whatever it may be, can you try to explain how that feeling comes about, and maybe how you kickstart that process?
Well, you've got to get you at first. I think even before you start to experience success on the ice and success in a short span of time, you've got to have there's a special chemistry, there's a special bond. It's a core leadership group within that locker room is essential. You've got to have some alpha males in there that are prepared to kind of show the way and communicate the way to anybody else that would, you might categorize as newer or perhaps, demonstrates less in the way of leadership qualities. It takes a, kind of a savvy group just as a baseline to really experience anything like that. And then at the end of the day, it comes down to simplifying your game. Simplifying your game to the point where, one battle leads to a solid shift, and a solid shift leads to a string of good shifts, and a string of good shifts leads to a one period, and that means the difference in a game.
It's that granular.
It's that granular.
Yeah.
It's that, to me, it's that finite in focus. It's just a team needs to experience small victories to see itself succeed, to regain that confidence, and it's a really slow process. It just doesn't happen at the snap of, a set of fingers, but it happens over time. But it always starts in that way, and I like the word you used to describe it. It's very granular, but that to me, in my experience, has kind of been the genesis of it for any group. And having said all that, the Preds are certainly that kind of an outfit to be able to go on that kind of run, without question. I think
I'm listening to the list of things that you're saying there, and I'm like, core leadership group,
check the box.
Check
the box.
Get on the list.
Absolutely right. And two, I think, you add to that, kind of parse that, or I say piece that together with the discussion we were having earlier, insofar as the Preds are kind of struggling up front to generate offense, in a regular way. And then, two, the goaltending. I mean, Pekka, over the course of his career, has never, had a season where he averaged below 900.
Right.
He's typically been, a full percentage point above 900 or better at any point, at any stretch during his career. So it's peculiar to see him tracking in the way that he is. Having said all that, that too is a confidence thing. That too is fixable, and the Preds are that kind of team to be able to kind of resurrect it and go on a run. Again, the pundits, me among them, were really forecasting that this group should finish in one of those top three spots in the Central Division. I think everybody's a little bit baffled that they're meandering where they are.
Well, and the year that they get to the Cup, Pekka Rinne had a very up and down season. One month he'd be at 87%, the next month he'd be at 94%, and he's totally capable of putting together a couple of months where he just dominates the entire universe.
Sure.
And so it'll be very interesting to see.
Yeah.
And I think I'm a big, I'm not a stats expert from an analytics standpoint, but if your career save percentage is 910 and you're playing at 880, the statistical regression to the mean is going to happen at some point.
So I assume Pekka
will get back to that.
Especially
point.
When you're talking about an athlete, and for many of us, certainly you and I and many of us in this room, we understand Pekka, know him to be, one, a great athlete, two, a very determined athlete,
sure,
and really among the most fit in all the NHL. It's really just a matter of confidence, and it's, again, experiencing a series of small victories that ultimately amounts to resurrecting that confidence. Peck is certainly capable of being a mechanic to his own game,
sure,
and getting this group to a place where, listen, that to me, there could not be a piece more critical than that, because I've seen it over the course of my career, especially at the pro level, when a goaltender is playing in a way that, you know, allows him to or allows your group to be in each and every game that you play, to battle in that way. The difference across the group's collective confidence is the impact is remarkable.
No question about it. Stu Grimson hanging out here with us, of course, on Smashville Live. When we come back, we'll get your thoughts on sort of what the players are doing mentally, physically during this break time.
Sure.
When they have some time to sort of check out. Do you check out? Do you double down on focus? So there's a lot of different strategies. We'll get your thoughts on that when we come back. And then we'll start looking at your career in the book. And we got some tickets we're going to give away as well. So don't go anywhere, folks, here on Smashville Live. I want to thank our wonderful sponsors, of course, New Amsterdam Vodka, Red Spirits and Wine, Spring Hill Heating and Cooling, Stu Grimson, Braden Gall. We are live here at Boomba's Craft Pizza and Tap House. This is Smashville Live. We'll be right back on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back to Boomba's Craft Pizza and Tap House here in East Nashville, just off of 5 points. This is Smashville Live on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Stu Grimson, Braden Gall here, our wonderful sponsors, of course, New Amsterdam Vodka, Red Spirits and Wine, Spring Hill Heating and Cooling, all the great and wonderful people that make this whole thing possible. And Stu, go by the book, The Grim Reaper. I see that there's a few copies here. I'm going to ask you if you wouldn't mind autographing a few of those. We'll give those away a little bit later on, if that's okay with you.
You bet.
Also have some Predators tickets for the game against Toronto, I believe, coming up on Monday. So make sure you register right over here with Gina from Promotions, who we're going to turn into a star one day, Stu.
Okay.
We're going to do that.
For those that are listening on their radios and can't see, Gina's waving at you right now.
Yep.
Yeah, she's trying to draw your attention over to,
in a very friendly manner,
I guess, the right part of your radio dial. Just imagine that Gina's on the right-hand side of your radio dial.
We might be going right to left. I'm not sure. But you can sign up over here. We'll give away some of those tickets a little bit later on in the show. And just before we get into your story, which is a fascinating one, Stu, I would like to get a player's perspective on the All-Star break. The Preds are going to be off for 8 or 9, 10 days. It's going to be a long time from a Saturday through a week back to a Monday. And when you're a team that's maybe not playing up to your own potential, you know that. You look in the mirror every night and you know what you're doing. And what is the strategy for the All-Star break? Do you get away completely, block it off, maybe mentally escape and try to recharge? Yeah. Do you grind it out during that time? You got to keep your body in shape, obviously. So sort of take us through what the players are going through right now as far as this break goes.
Yeah, I think maybe to answer it, you know, from an individual and then a collective point of view, I think individually, first thing to say really is everybody's different and everybody's going to have their own routine. I think fitness for everybody in some form is going to be a baseline. Everybody wants to, you know, kind of maintain that foundation they've built all summer long and maintained to this point through the regular season. So they'll be active. They'll probably, it depends, there may be some guys that go out of their way to find a little ice. Most do not, but everybody's kind of wired and built differently, and everybody has their own personal physical preferences. From a team point of view, I really do believe that a break like this can be the best medicine for the Preds. I would even paint, you know, this analogy. We have seen Jake Allen's a pretty good example. Tuukka Rask is a pretty good example. There have been goaltenders over the course of the last 3 or 4 years, and I've never really observed this in the past. They've struggled to the point where it's visibly apparent they're almost devoid of confidence. And the hockey operations staff of that club has kind of parked that goaltender, just taken him out of the mix, even called up a third, fourth string goaltender from within the organization, given that goaltender the opportunity to work with an on-ice coach, to work with maybe even a mental strength coach, but just the ability to kind of get some space from the rink, from the group, and allow that person to be a mechanic to their own game. And we've seen it work in many, many cases. So I really do think in a separate vein, in a different way, the Preds are kind of getting a pause to get some space, to get a mental vacation from what has been a very difficult task the first half of the season to this point. Hasn't gone their way, but it's an opportunity to get some separation, renew the perspective, and especially considering they've got, you know, a new coach, this will give Coach Hines an opportunity to kind of put pen to paper and talk about, think about things, tweaks, system-related issues right. that he really wants to tweak or change. So between those two elements, to me, there's really a foundation there for the Preds to kind of come back and to go on a nice little nice little 10-game run, coming out of the break.
It's fascinating, too, because knowing Pekka's personality, it doesn't strike me as I don't think he's capable of divorcing
right.
himself from the moment, but it might be something that is, like, when it's forced upon you to take a week and a half
right.
off, it might be best for Pekka, because he's the kind of guy who, like, he's going to labor through every practice
yeah.
because he cares about every detail.
He's hard on himself.
So desperately.
Yeah.
Stu Grimson joining us here. So the book is The Grim Reaper.
Yep.
You can get it anywhere books are sold, so go order it now. We've got a couple here we'll give away that I'm going to make you sign. And just sort of, first of all, again, so many questions about the evolution of the game of hockey and
sure.
sort of your role and becoming an attorney and all these things. But just in general, why did you want to write a book?
Well, you know, it's a great question. I suppose it's not one single answer, but I think the best answer, Braden, really is this. When you take an unconventional path to the game and arriving at the game's highest level, the NHL, I took a very different path to get here.
Maybe can you explain a little bit about that too?
I will.
As you
go? Let me kind of double back, and I will. Took an unconventional path to get here, and then number two, played a really different, unique role while I played the game, and then I've done some different things after the game, and we've kind of talked about that a little bit already. So when you kind of envision that's the path that I have taken over time, you kind of learn some things, you make some mistakes, you get knocked down, you jack yourself up by your bootstraps and you find a way to kind of fall forward yet again. That's kind of the path I've taken. And I think when you do that, and this has really come back to me in spades, as I get feedback from folks that have read the book, and it doesn't matter whether they are doctors or shop stewards at a metalworking, machine store or any walk of life, they communicate to me that there's truth and there's application in some of the things they've read coming out of my book. So it's been very encouraging. But back to your earlier point, did take an unconventional path to get here. Usually it's amateur hockey and a player will either chart down one of two different avenues. One is the major college route. The other is the major junior route. Generally speaking, that accounts for probably 99% of the people that end up on an NHL roster. I did both. I played major junior for 3 years. I struggled with the role that I played, this physical enforcer type role. Wasn't sure that I wanted to pursue a professional career. Went back to school, played 2 years of college hockey before I matured to a point where I said to myself, one, I think I want to take a crack at this to see how far I can go. And number two, I think I've matured physically, yes, but more importantly, emotionally. And, between myself and the Calgary Flames, we came to terms on a contract, and I turned pro with the Calgary Flames. But, again, the unconventional path that I took is essentially highlighted in that way. There aren't many players that kind of play both, and
sure.
I did.
Is that kind of what you want? Because, again, you alluded to people saying, hey, I picked this up from your book. Is there anything specific you want people to learn, whether it's about hockey, whether it's about the lifestyle, whether it's about
yeah.
your role? I mean, certainly when you got out of the game, you were already talking about the effects, the role that you played as
yeah.
far as the health issues. And certainly now today we have NFL players and NHL players retiring because of concerns about this stuff. We're so much more aware of everything.
Right.
So is there anything that you want people when they – go buy your book, as they all are going to do that are listening. Is there something
sure.
that you want specifically people to take away from reading it?
You know, it's a great question. There's a good bit in there. It was a heavy lift. It was a labor of love and one I would gladly take again, having come out the other side. I think the single most important thing that I hope would resonate through all this is really the one thing that has kind of been an anthem in my life across my now 54 going on 55 years of living, which is never let your fears inhibit you from moving past them to experience what's on the other side, because your dreams and the life you choose to live might well live on the other side of those fears. It's a lesson I've learned in my life several times, never in a more graphic way than really my second NHL call-up. My first fight with Dave Brown, the former heavyweight champion of the world, and sorry, of the NHL, and in my estimation, the baddest, meanest man to ever walk the planet, certainly on or skate the planet.
So this is 89?
89, yeah.
Okay.
Good for you. So lost, one, beat Dave Brown, and then lost to him badly, lost to him in really humiliating fashion, broke my cheekbone, broke my orbital in three different places, had a stainless steel pin inserted in my skull. It was a bad beat. But again, was able to say to myself, if that's the worst that I could ever experience playing this role, and I can move past this, essentially put it behind me and do what I need to do moving forward, I have nothing left to fear in doing what I'm doing. So, you know, it was a way of me communicating to myself the very lesson that you and I have just talked about.
So you were already able at that age to sort of see, to step back from yourself and see that that's what was happening in real time, or did you even know it was happening?
I think so. I think I did. I mean, I've never been, and that's not for me to say. I've always been blessed with this, you know, 35,000 foot view, this worldly perspective, but I had a pretty good sense in my mind. You know, I have two choices to make. I can either hang him up, I quit, because kind of, you know, going on but not playing that role, that brand of hockey, that was a short career path for me, or a short career trajectory. Or my second option was pick yourself up, dust yourself off, and get back in the fray and do it all over again. I knew that path two was the one I wanted, and I had to find a way to reason my way, talk my way through that. And I think in some way, Braden, to your point, I was articulating to myself, I'm facing down my greatest fears, and I'm prepared to do that right now. Dave Brown is really the personification
no
of my
kidding.
Greatest fears, because on the other side of that lays a career in the NHL, and that's what I want.
Yeah, it's a remarkable story. And we'll try to explain to people, because we have so many young hockey fans in Nashville. This is sort of our first, you know, generation of hockey fans that grew up only knowing hockey in Nashville, right? You know, my kids are only going to know the Predators in Nashville. They're not going to know anything else. And, you know, I moved here in 97. I grew up a hockey fan, you know, all around. And when I got here, then the next year I learned a hockey team was coming as a high school kid who played the game growing up. And I'm going, this is the coolest thing that's ever happened.
Right.
So we've got a lot of young kids that are huge Predators hockey fans. It is a slightly different game today than it was in 1989 when you came up. So we'll get into some of those details, some of those differences when we come back. Again, buy the book, Grim Reaper. Stu Grimson hanging out here on Smashville Live. We are at Boomba's Craft Pizza and Tap House in East Nashville. Our great sponsors, New Amsterdam Vodka, Red Spirits and Wine, Spring Hill Heating and Cooling as well. We will be right back with more with Stu right here on Smashville Live, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back, Boomba's Craft Pizza and Tap House in East Nashville, right off of 5 points. Stu Grimson, Braden Gall here on Smashville Live, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Our great sponsors, New Amsterdam Vodka, Red Spirits and Wine, Spring Hill Heating and Cooling. And we got a couple of books over here and some tickets to a Preds game. So if everybody has signed up, please do that. We will draw out some names here coming up next segment. And I'll put you to work, Stu, if you don't mind.
You got it.
You
got
to reach
That's
in.
Why we're here, my friend. That's why we're here.
You've only fought the most dangerous and terrifying hockey players in the history of the universe. Can you reach into a box and pull out a name? Do you think you're capable of that?
That seems like small potatoes.
I think you can handle it.
When you put that kind of context around it,
right.
Braden, the answer is easy. That is very doable.
Yeah, that's what I do. Context. That's what I do, Stu.
you're in the context
game. I'm in the context business. So speaking of context, so if you missed last segment, what Stu broke into the league late 80s, 88, 89, and you had a moment where you get in a fight, and first of all, run through the list again of the injuries in this particular fight. I heard a broken orbital.
Yeah.
Can you pins in the face? Can you explain that again one more time?
I was hit hard in the face, the right side of my face, several times, broke my cheekbone, which is that bone directly under your eye, next to your nose, and then your orbital bone is actually the larger kind of protruding bone that sits over top of your eye. That's essentially, just for anatomical understanding, it's underneath your eyebrow. Broke that in three places. And the way that you set the broken cheekbone, I don't think there was an actual fix for the orbital bone, but the cheekbone underneath, there was a 6-inch stainless steel pin that went through that. So they tap, they go inside your skull from behind your ear.
All the kids are on the playground right now. It's okay.
Has everybody finished their dinner? And then they insert a stainless steel pin in through that cheekbone. And then they set the front end, the leading edge of that pin, inside the three bones in your nose. And that sits there for 5 weeks until the fracture heals.
So the reason I asked you to do that is because I want everyone to sort of grasp, you know, especially the younger hockey fan, to grasp exactly what it was that was. And you can correct me if I'm wrong here. I don't know if that was all that uncommon.
No.
For players of your style at that time. So, again, I wanted to paint the picture for fans out there to sort of understand what it was the game was like when you came up. And if you can kind of try to explain just through the course of your career how it's changed. Because, again, you ended in 2002.
Yeah.
So before the lockout changed, a lot of rules changed and all that stuff happens, the second lockout.
Yeah.
And so there's just, I guess, try to put into words how the game changed during your career, but also from that point until today, where we've got Philip Forsberg, who's allowed to do a lacrosse-style sorcery behind the net, and nobody even blinks an eye at that on the other team right now.
Yeah, so I think the best way to describe it is, in a very general way, since the game was born, it's had from the outset, it was both beautiful and incredibly physical and violent at the same time. And that violent physical stage was really random, really arbitrary, very ruthless in the early going. And I'm going like back to the 40s and 50s. And
like when goaltenders didn't wear masks.
Exactly.
Because that sounds smart.
Exactly right. And so the point I'm making, Braden, is over time, the game, I think, has evolved to a point where the physical nature of it is still there, but it's become much more controlled and less violent and less random. But so as I kind of paint that backdrop, within that kind of physical violent background, there was this notion, this concept of the heavyweight enforcer, and that was me. And on really through the 80s, back to the 70s, 80s, 90s, almost into the 2000s, each and every team had somebody, sometimes two guys like that, and the purpose behind having somebody like that was so that, I always say, if you didn't have a Stu Grimson or a Bob Probert or a Dave Brown on your roster, the other team played you differently, and by differently, they took advantage of your smaller skill guys physically and tried to run them out of the rink and inhibit them from playing their own game. That was the notion of the heavyweight enforcer.
Victor Arvidsson would have been targeted heavily. I mean, he's targeted today. In 2020, he's still targeted.
Yeah. So a guy like me would essentially be charged with nobody holding the other team accountable to the point where nobody's going to take advantage of the Matt Duchesnes, the Ryan Johansons, the Philip Forsbergs of the game, because I am there, by virtue of my physical presence to discourage that. That was essentially the justification for the heavyweight enforcer. And as time has gone on, yes, we still see an occasional fight, but I think the rules have changed to the point where the game is faster. It is, to some degree, less physical. And two, add to that a second, I think, contributing factor. The salary cap has kind of had the nature of putting each and every team inside a tight box within which every dollar you spend on any given player,
they're a commodity.
It's you have to be able to justify it. And it's hard to carve out 750 to $1.5 million to have a heavyweight enforcer when, again, the role is just not as necessary anymore. So those two elements, I think, have contributed to the fact that while fighting continues to exist, you don't have a person that is there, not exclusively, and I want to make this point clear. He's not exclusively there for that reason, but it's his primary reason for being there, if I can kind of cut it that fine.
Because you still have to find scoring from your fourth line in general today.
Right.
And let's be clear, this is not an NHL thing. the knowledge and information and health and safety of the players, and then the rules to make the game, quote, faster and more entertaining for fans, because let's be honest, it is entertainment at the end of the day. Yeah. Every sport is. And those two things tie in directly with this as well. Can you try to explain how you felt at the end of your career physically? What you think that you know, 15 years in the NHL and your role did to your body, and just because I know you've talked about it before, and certainly there's a lot of it in the book, I'm assuming. So just maybe explain to somebody exactly what you felt when you retired and I'm done here.
Yeah, I think that's it's a good question, and I think there's a good analogy in there too, I think is worth touching on, or a good comparison, I think is a better way to say it. So the answer to your first point is I am somebody who retired from the game due to post-concussion syndrome. And I don't think it was any one blow necessarily that I sustained that really put me in that situation. It was the accumulation of a lot of blows over a long stretch of time.
And let's be clear, we're talking about fighting the baddest dudes in the world. I mean, we're not talking about like a couple of big shots like a football player might take or even a Phil Forsberg might take. We're talking about the baddest dudes on the block.
Braden, 260-pound men like George LaRocque, who are capable of crushing human bone with their hands, with their bare hands. Not a gloved, boxing, leather-clad hand.
Right.
Not an MMA kind of padded with their bare hand. So that's essentially the backdrop. And it was actually George LaRocque who delivered the last blow, the blow that kind of broke the proverbial camel's back. But that was a punch that, you know, I had sustained dozens of times over the course of my career. You don't bounce back from it at 36 like you did when you were 26, especially considering there's been all kinds of head trauma from 26 to 36 and even prior to that period. So that's the reason I left the game. I dealt with post-concussion syndrome for many, many months after that, and it was a gradual process to return to normal. Probably want to put some air quotations around that. Normal, but I feel good today. I really do. It's been a good long while coming. I feel great today. If you followed me around, you would say Stu leads a healthy, normal life. He's a little, you know, he's a little OCD, but he leads a substantially normal life.
I feel like that was not a result of the concussion. That might have been just
that's right.
The genetic
makeup. That had nothing
makeup.
To do with getting hit in the head a lot. But I will say this. I consider myself lucky to all that I went through. I walked from the game really mostly intact. I feel great today. Never healthier, never happier. But I will say this. I probably endured less physical punishment, as hard as this might be to understand, than the Jeremy Roenicks, the Victor Arvidsons of the world.
Taking the constant body beats.
I'll tell you what, I played 3, 4, 5 minutes a night. I mean, if I played 10 minutes a night, I was exhausted. Like, that was an aberration. So, yes, I did a very physical, very physically taxing thing when I dropped my gloves. But that happened 20 or 30 times a year at the most. Think about the punishment that Victor Arvidsson or Patrick Hornquist. I mean, there's so many great examples.
Yep.
Those guys will have different, perhaps more severe aches and pains than
later
I do
in life.
In their life. It's a hard, hard role to play when you're playing 15 minutes to 18 minutes a night like Victor Arvidsson does, especially in that frame.
Stu Grimson hanging out with us here as our guest tonight on Smashville Live. And, of course, immediately upon retiring – after fighting 20 or 30 times against the toughest dudes on the planet, you decided to become an attorney, like everyone does. So we're going to discuss that transition when we come back. Stu Grimson hanging out here on Smashville Live, Boomboss Craft Pizza and Tap House in East Nashville, right off of Five Points. Our great sponsors, of course, New Amsterdam Vodka, Red Spirits and Wine, Spring Hill Heating and Cooling. We'll give away some tickets and some books when we come back. Braden Gall, Stu Grimson here on Smashville Live, ESPN 102.5 The Game. This is Smashville Live on ESPN 102.5 The Game at Boomba's Craft Pizza and Tap House. Stu Grimson, our guest tonight. My name is Braden Gall. Our sponsors, New Amsterdam Vodka, Red Spirits and Wine, Spring Hill Heating and Cooling, of course, making all this happen on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Now Gina from Promotions is wandering around. Now, my question is, Stu, should we give away tickets to the Preds game first, Gina from Promotions? Is that what we should do? and then give away books? So she says yes.
I'm all for that.
I listen to what Gina says.
I'm for what Gina says.
All right, so
if you,
Stu, could reach into that box there, and we're going to find out how you became a lawyer in just a minute, but reach into that box, pull out a name. Here we go.
Have you seen the size of my fingers? My fingers are not going through that little slot.
Nope, they're
right
not.
There.
They're absolutely
okay,
not.
Okay, we can actually pry that slot apart.
We're going to open up. We'll pull out one name, and this first name will be a winner to the Toronto game coming up on Monday with the Nashville Predators at Bridgestone Arena.
Oh, my goodness.
It sounds like you know somebody that you just pulled out.
The fix is in. The fix is in. But you saw me look away from the box.
There is no tomfoolery. No shenanigans. This is all on the up and up.
What is this prize?
This is tickets to the Preds game.
Brett Newkirk wins.
Brett Newkirk wins, and I have a feeling that the smaller version of Brett Newkirk will be going to the game.
We should be able to locate Brett Newkirk, although I don't see him right now. I see the rest of his family.
Yeah, there you go. So, Gina, we've got two books. Is that correct? That Stu is going to autograph and give away. So if you want to draw out two more names for me, we'll have you autograph those books and give those away again.
I hate to call out Brett Newkirk on live air because I think he was in the restroom as this announcement was made. But
are you eligible if you're in the bathroom?
Yeah. Okay. Well, he's got the tickets.
Oh, yeah, it's already.
Good luck trying to get those tickets back for him.
We've already given them to him. All right, our first book.
Autograph book, correct.
By the way, autograph book, The Grim Reaper on newsstands now, of course, written by Stu Grimson, The Life and Career of a Reluctant Warrior. Stu, who you got?
For the first book, the first Grim Reaper book, it is going to none other than Linda Gray.
Linda Gray, all right, excellent
Linda
job.
Gray.
Linda Gray
gets
an autograph book.
Come on down.
Now, number two, this is the last time I'll make you do anything, I promise.
Book two.
Again, The Grim Reaper, buy it. Give Stu some money.
Going deep into the little basket of treasures there. And this one goes to Hunter Daniels.
Hunter Daniels, our second winner.
All right,
gets an autograph book.
So Hunter's up here. And,
there you go.
Man, I mean, I don't think I've seen anybody do a quicker.
Man, that's.
40. It's not
that's
a 40
a quick,
yard sprint. It's a 40 step sprint.
It's a quick change, a short shift there.
Short shift. That's right.
He got to the table awfully quickly.
You got one of those, and we'll sign it up for you, Hunter. Thank you, sir.
So thank you guys all for signing up. Of course, tickets, books, all kinds of cool stuff here on Smashville Live. That's why you listen. That's why you come out to the event. So real quickly, we don't have a ton of time here. I would like to know quickly just what inspired you to go into the legal profession. For those that don't know, you became a lawyer, an attorney, after your enforcer days in the NHL, which again is just a bizarre sentence to say to somebody, but it's amazing. So why did you end up doing that, and what inspired you?
There were a lot of guys before me, former players that went before me that went on to earn law degrees. Some practiced law, some did not. But, you know, they went on to kind of work some great jobs within our sport. Guys like Mike Liut, guys like Neil Sheehy, Ken Dryden, George McPhee, they've all become managers and agents and team executives. And it was really for that reason that I went back to law school. That was one reason. The other reason was this. I mean, I was pretty sure I wanted to stay in the game in some capacity. But at the same time, if I did not, I knew that a degree in the law would give me a broad range of choices across, you know, whatever it was that I ultimately piqued my interest in and I felt led to do. So it was really for those two reasons. And it, you know, again, it's one of those things that has really come to pay dividends for me over time. I've done a lot of things since I quit playing the game, Braden, and I've enjoyed kind of every step of the path.
And did you have some? You did have some part, right, after the game, as far as getting involved with the PA and.
Yeah, I was associate counsel to the NHL Players Association for 2 years after I passed the Tennessee bar.
What was that experience like?
It was interesting. The Players Association is a political lightning rod. It's a hard place to work. You know, you don't make a lot of friends in the game in that capacity, apart from the fact that you're representing players, and of course they appreciate your advocacy. But it's a lot of
people that want a lot of things.
Yeah, and it was a contentious period during that. If folks may remember back then, that was the aftermath of the first season-long shutdown, and there was a huge kind of shift of the tectonic plates for the NHL Players Association. The former head, Bob Goodenow, left, on the worst of terms, and Ted right. Saskin came in, and I got hired during all that. So it was kind of a political hot mess back then.
So now we talk about hockey. We analyze hockey teams. We sell books. We write books. Now we do all the other stuff.
We do all the other stuff. And
hang out at Smashville Live.
When you got a head this large, you can wear a lot of different hats, and I enjoy wearing a lot of different hats.
Well, Stu, it's been a pleasure hanging out with you. And for those of you who enjoyed the conversation and hearing from Stu, of course, I suppose you should go buy the book to read more of what
absolutely.
Stu has to say.
Hopefully that piqued your interest.
So The Grim Reaper, of course, is on newsstands now. You can go check it out. You can catch Stu on NHL Network from time to time, a bunch. I shouldn't say from time to time. I should say a bunch. And, of course, on the Twitters there, on the socials, which is at A.
S. Grimson,
correct? Yeah. I got it right. So follow him there on Twitter and tell him how much you enjoyed the book. Give him a great review. Give him 5 stars, all that good stuff. So, Stu, it's a pleasure. Thank you so much for hanging out with us.
My pleasure, Brady.
It was much, much fun talking to you, and you have a very unique perspective, my friend.
Well, I appreciate you saying that. I really enjoyed our time together. This was a lot of fun.
To our great sponsors, of course, New Amsterdam Vodka, Red Spirits and Wine, Spring Hill Heating and Cooling, each and every week that make this possible. Great stuff as usual. To Gina from Promotions, who is here on site, always making everything sound great. Schiller, our engineer, as well as Calvin back in the studio. My name is Braden Gall. Thank you for listening here at Boomba's Pizza Craft, Craft Pizza and Tap House as well. This is Smashville Live. Until next week, everybody, have a great evening here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.